Small Bones by Vicky Grant, narrated by Jules Price, published by Orca Book Publishers. Prologue. July 9th, 1947, sometime after midnight. It was dark, and he didn't know where he was going. He pulled over to check the map she'd drawn for him, but a lot of good that did. She hadn't been there in years. She'd scribbled vague lines on the back of a soup label and said, "The turn is right before the gas station, or maybe right after." Then she'd drawn a long squiggle, and at the edge of the label, a box with a roof on it. She'd pushed the paper across the kitchen table and said, "You'll find it. Not much else around there. Whole reason I left." Then she'd rubbed a smudge of blood off her hand and creaked to her feet. She didn't have time for this. She had her own pressing matters to attend to. He chucked the map out the car window and got back on the road, gravel machine gunning the bushes. He'd keep heading east. A deer materialized in front of him, its eyes flat and shiny as new dimes. The man swerved but didn't slow down. He had to be back before dawn. He was angry with her, but knew he had no right to be. An old woman could hardly be expected to drive 3 hours along deserted back roads. Likewise, he certainly couldn't be left to deal with, he struggled for the words, female issues. So he had to drive. She had to take care of the rest, simple as that. He'd been through worse. His headlights stuttered over the potholes. He hadn't passed a car or a house in what seemed like hours. Even so, he found himself worrying that someone might happen upon the crumpled map at the side of the road and use it as evidence against him. He gripped the steering wheel and drove faster, his neck jutting toward the dashboard, a cartoon drawing of a guilty man on the run. He was being ridiculous. Guilty? He leaned back, loosened his tie, and took his first real breath in miles. He hadn't done anything wrong. It was that damn girl. This was her fault. What had she been thinking? Or had she been thinking at all? That was the problem with kids today. They didn't think. They had it soft. Too many cheap novels and silly movies filling their heads with romantic crap. Love conquers all? That certainly hadn't been his experience. She wasn't a child, for God's sake. She was 17, old enough to know better. Well, she was paying for her foolishness now, wasn't she? He took off his hat and threw it in the back seat. Two families, two fine old families, could be ruined by this. "Damn girl," he said it out loud this time. "Damn bloody girl." It was just a turn of phrase, an affectation he'd picked up in England, but it made a picture pop into his head. He saw the white shirt soaked red with blood, the gray face, the crazy eyes. His anger melted into something closer to fear. He reached across the passenger seat and pushed the edge of the towel away with his finger. The baby's face turned toward him. He jerked back in shock. He hadn't really expected it to be alive still. There was a jar of milk on the car floor and a tiny spoon in his coat pocket. He was supposed to feed it if it got hungry. He didn't know the first thing about babies. Was it hungry? It wasn't crying. It must be fine. That's what he told himself. He stepped on the gas. What if he'd already passed the turnoff? What if the Mounties stopped him? How would he explain a newborn baby, especially one like this? Dinner napkin for a diaper? Umbilical cord pinched off with a clothespin? They'd know there was something fishy. Who would he say it belonged to? What if it died? The questions wouldn't stop. And then there, almost miraculously, was the gas station she'd mentioned, and just after that a road, and pointing the way, a sign half obscured by alders. Only the word benevolent was legible. It gave him the creeps, that word, but he shook his head and carried on. In minutes, he was crawling up the long driveway. He pulled onto the lawn. He didn't want to get too close to the house, and killed the engine. He leaned his elbows on the steering wheel and rubbed his face in his hands. Do it, just be done with it. He opened the car door, and the hinges shrieked. But no lights turned on, no dog barked, so he picked up the baby, small and alien as a newborn kitten, face like a rotten apple, and got going. He wondered if he was doing the right thing. It wasn't too late. No one had seen him. The The girl thought it was dead anyway. He could turn around, drive back down that deserted road, or another one just like it, and leave the baby somewhere no one would ever find it. It wouldn't survive long. Which was worse, a merciful death or a miserable life? It was a fair question, and not the first time he'd had to ask it. The baby squirmed. A tiny fist, gnarly as a wad of gum, jutted out from under the towel in some kind of salute. It's a tough little bugger, he thought. Then, despite himself, she's a tough little bugger. It's a she. There was no going back now. He began picking his way across the lawn toward the benevolent home for necessitous girls. He realized that once upon a time, before the house had become an orphanage, someone grand must have lived here. The lord of the manor, no doubt, had had lots of foundlings left on his doorstep. The thought shamed him. A foundling. A common foundling. He turned around and got his old coat from the car. She'd grabbed it from the hook by the door, ran down the driveway after him, insisted he take it. It was July and would be sizzling by noon. But at 3 a.m, it was cool and damp, and the baby was so horribly small. He wrapped her in his coat, placed the bundle on the front step, then banged at the door until a lamp flicked on in a third-floor window. He was back on the road by the time he saw a light flood across the veranda and a silhouette appear in the doorway. His shoulders relaxed. Someone will look after her, he thought. She's someone else's problem now. He had 3 more hours before he'd be home, plenty of time to think. More than he would have liked, he no longer had anything to distract him from the truth. And the truth was this: the girl wasn't to blame. He was. He was the arrogant jerk who'd gotten this whole sorry thing started. He'd spend the rest of his life trying to figure out how to make it right.